Okay, so today is November 7th. We're learning Mishnah, Masechet Baba Kama, Tractate Baba Kama, Chapter 5, Mishnah 4. We finished last time Mishnah 3 with certain parts of the Gemara. So before we look at Chapter 5, Mishnah 4 of Baba Kama, we have to look at a verse that's going to serve as the foundation of this Mishnah. And the verse is in Chapter 21 of Shemot, of Exodus. That's Perek Chaf Aleph. And it's two verses, Chaf Bet and Chaf Gimel, and also even Chafdala, 22, 23, and also even 24. So again, try not to look at the English because it'll confuse you. So let's look slowly at the Hebrew. These verses are so famous. So famous, and I'll say why in another few seconds. Verse Chafbet in chapter 21, 22. It's the second line of the page, 422 in the art scroll. V'chi yinatsu anashim. And
so
if
I'm already lost.
Okay.
What page are you on?
422 in the art scroll.
Oh, 4.
Chapter Chaf Aleph 21 of the book of Exodus.
Okay. Oh, so Chaf Bet. Okay.
Yeah. Okay. Anashim, which means if or when will fight men. When men will fight. They're having a disagreement, an argument, they're punching each other in the face. That's clear. V'nakfu isha hara, and they'll push a pregnant woman. That's also clear. There's no question what that means. So they're fighting, and inadvertently, they push a woman. They didn't mean to do so.
Is
right?
Nakfu the push?
Nakfu, yes. Yeah. Good evening.
Hello.
V'yatsu yiladeya. Those two words are the key, and it's hard to understand exactly what they mean. I shouldn't say hard to understand. It's hard to decide of two possibilities. Literally, what those words are is Yatsu Yeladea. So we're just in the Chumash now.
So it can be either a miscarriage or
page 422. You shouldn't tell them. Right. Literally, the word says Yatsu Yeladea, and came forth her children. Velo Yason, and there won't be a disaster, a tragedy. The rest of it is easy. Anosh Yanesh Kashe Yashitala Valeisha V'natan Biflilim. Will be punished as the husband will place upon him, upon the assailant, v'natan biflilim, and it should be given in court. That's not important for us.
So
basically what we saw, that's the question. So let's say it again. These two men were fighting, so I'm reviewing. These two men were fighting, and they inadvertently knocked down a woman who was pregnant, and her children came forth. That's what it says, children came forth, but there wasn't a tragedy.
So does that mean that it was a live birth, or does it mean that the woman was still alive?
Yes, that's the question. So let's just say the two possibilities. Tragedy. Say it again?
If there wasn't a tragedy, they
must
say
not be alive.
Everybody lived.
Well, here, we are coming with preconceived notions of what a tragedy is.
Yeah.
So let's talk about the two different ways to understand the verse. But before we do that, let's read the next verse, because it mentions some of the same words. The 23rd verse. V'imason yeyeh, and if there'll be a tragedy, on page 422, the fourth line from the top. V'imason yeyeh, and if a tragedy will be, v'natata nefesh tachat nafesh. And you should give life for life, and then it goes on, ayin tachat ayin, eye for eye, etc., etc., etc. So what we just read is the following. I'm going to say something that's clear. It's not ambiguous. The clear part is that if there's a tragedy, whatever that is, you have to pay life for life. In other words, it's a capital case. But if there's not a tragedy, but just her child came forth, her children came forth, then it's a matter of monetary payment. So if there's a tragedy, then it's life for life. If just her children came forth, then it is a monetary case. So the question is now, what does it mean by tragedy, and what does it mean by her children came forth? And there are two different possibilities, and it's hard to figure out which of them it is. So Ilana started, so let's go back to what Ilana said. I'm drawing her back into the class from the sewing.
I have to do at least two things at one time.
If you're able, I can hardly chew gum and walk at the same time. So anyway, so what is one possibility of Yatsu Yeladea and Ason?
One possibility is that she had a miscarriage.
She had a miscarriage, meaning that Yatsu Yeladea means her children came forth dead.
Right.
Without life.
Was it the children or not child?
It's in the plural. It's in the plural. But it doesn't necessarily have to be more than one, but the word's in the plural, so I'm just being exact. So, wait a second, am I right about that, Ilana?
No.
I was wrong. Yeladea, I'm sorry.
Yes, Yeladea means they came out, but the question is, did they come out?
No, I am right, though. Sorry, I'm right. It's in the plural.
Is it children or child?
Yeah. How did
it is
there a,
it is children.
Yelda. It's her
Yelda.
Child.
Yelda.
But Yeladea is her children.
Yelda.
Would it make a difference?
Yes.
No, I don't think it makes a difference if it's one or more, but I'm just saying the way it's written. So anyway, so one possibility is that her child or her children came forth still born, not alive, v'lo yason, but there wasn't a tragedy. But if there was a tragedy, it's life for life. Then what does a tragedy mean?
That she died.
That she died. Okay, so that is one totally legitimate way to understand the verse. We're in the Chumash on page 422.
Thank you.
One totally legitimate way to understand the verse, meaning that if she had a miscarriage caused and the fetus was expelled from her womb as a stillborn, that is the case in which it's only a financial penalty to be paid. And she, the woman, didn't die.
Right.
23, if the woman died, verse 23, then it's nefesh tachat nefesh, life for life. If that's the proper reading, and it's certainly possibly legitimate, then there's a tremendously important principle that we learn from here, a principle that is relevant to this very day. It's about abortion. And it tells you explicitly that an abortion is not a capital case. It says explicitly that an unborn child, you cause the death of an unborn child inadvertently. It's not murder, it's not manslaughter, it's just a matter of monetary damages. It's equivalent to inadvertently cutting off someone's pinky or pulling their hair. I'm not trying to make light of it.
Inadvertently, though.
This is inadvertent. But if inadvertently, right, it's a monetary case, then it's also going to be a monetary case if it's done intentionally.
Okay. That's
because we're saying something about the status of the fetus.
Yeah.
If you kill a fetus, it's not an ason. It's not a tragedy such that you would have said nefesh tachat nefesh, soul for soul, life for life. No, it's only a tragedy if she dies, the woman who's already born and alive.
Mm-hmm. Can you clarify for me, this is a stillborn child, in other words, a child is born that at a time when it should be able to survive outside of the womb on its own versus a miscarriage. What's happening here?
It doesn't say.
So
it
this
says, it looks like any case
so
in which the child is not yet born and my action calls to be stillborn, I am not considered to be in any sense the taker of a nefesh.
That's interesting because that's even more extreme than, you know, many opinions on current opinions on.
So let me just Shani.
But if the child was born with disabilities, how would you pay for that? Or would you have to?
If it was stillborn, you mean?
It was born alive, but like with disabilities.
But I'm not going to answer that because I'm just going to relate to what the verse says.
Okay.
So the verse says, according to this reading, that the child was born unalive. Okay, so that reading we just said again is possible, and it's legitimate, and it fits very well into the verses. Let's talk about another completely different way of reading it, which would be what?
That their son is the death of the embryo.
Right. It could be Yatsu Yeladea means her children came out alive. V'lo Yason, and there wasn't a tragedy, meaning the children were not dead. And then next verse it says Im Asonye, but if there was a tragedy would mean if they were
dead.
If they were dead. So this second reading says that it's not a tragedy because they came out alive. But had they come out dead, that would have been a tragedy such that nefesh tachat nefesh. Such that life for life. According to the second reading, we're told that if you kill inadvertently, an unborn child, you cause it to come out of the womb dead when it could have come out, you cause it to come out dead, then it's a capital case. which says something completely different about the way we should relate to abortion.
But how do we relate to the second phrase, we chin and iron and all that?
What's the problem?
You mean the child can come out alive but with eye problem?
Or no, that's read that separately. It's just saying once we said nefesh tachat nefesh, then I'm going to add something unrelated, that in other unrelated cases, there's ayin tachat ayin. It's hard to relate.
It's unrelated.
Say it again?
Why wouldn't that be the issue of, say, the child is disabled?
Well, you know what? I don't want to go into it now because this is just one issue before we get to the Mishnah. Believe me, in the past I've spent, I've given a seminar on abortions, okay. And examining these verses inside and outside. Now, I'll just tell you what's fascinating, and for many people, unbelievable. Remember the two approaches we said, the first and the second?
Mm-hmm.
The first was that Yatsu Yiladea was dead, and that's not a tragedy. The second was Yatsu Yiladea is alive, and that's why it's not a tragedy. Had they come out dead, it would have been a tragedy. Of those two approaches, Philo, the Greek Jewish leader and scholar at the very turn of the millennia, 2,000 years ago, in Alexandria, he gave the second reading.
The children.
That what came out was live children, but had they been dead, it would have been nefesh tachat nefesh, life for life. And he did so in opposition, in clear opposition to Chazal. Hazal said black and white in Masechet Oalot, in Tractate Oalot, and other places also, and we'll see one of them today, actually, right now. The Hazal said, Yatsu Yiladeh means they came out dead. And that's not an ason. The only ason is if the woman was killed. The woman's not killed if it's only an abortion. Excuse me for using the word only, but I mean to emphasize a point here. If it's only an abortion, then it's mamon, it's money. It's natan biflilim, give according to what the judges say. And that's the foundation for the way the halakha understands abortion. That abortion is never, ever, ever, ever going to be complete murder. It might be a very serious crime in halakha, and it is, but it's not murder. And that's why there's always permission to save the woman's life at the price of the fetus's life, because it's not the fetus's life. It's not considered to be life. So again, what we're saying here is absolutely abortion is not murder. It might be a very serious crime, just a hair's breadth from murder, but it's not murder. So now let's take that for our Mishnah.
Is Yatsu Yiladeh, is that a phrase? Or is it, in other words, is that the expression for miscarriage or for
not pregnancy? Not in the Tanakh.
Okay.
It becomes that in Chazal.
Where it's clearly, it's not something to split up like afal pi. You would try and, if you interpreted the words, it wouldn't make any sense, but it's this is interpreted as a phrase by Chazal.
Yatsu Yiladeh is interpreted as a phrase.
Okay.
I wouldn't call it technical. Well, look at the Mishnah. We'll get to the Mishnah right now. Get to the Mishnah right now. Without further ado. So you guys have the sources, I should say the questions printed. Well, you need the questions. Anyone else need the questions? I gave you guys the questions. Okay, we have the questions and now the Mishnah. Does everyone have the Mishnah? I have other copies if you need. Okay, so we have the Mishnah. So we're in Perek Hamishi, the fifth chapter, the fourth Mishnah. Okay. Shu shaya mitkaven lechaviro. Vihika et ha'isha v'yatsu yiladeha. An ox that was intending for its fellow, and it struck the woman, and came forth her children.
So we replace the human with a
bull. Right. So these two oxen are fighting, right? It's not human beings. It's a different case to the Tanakh, but it's similar. Two oxen are fighting, and they're at it, and one intends to hurt its fellow, but instead it hurts a standing woman, a woman who's nearby, v'yatsu yiladeha, which means she was pregnant. V'yatsu yiladeha. Now, we might not know what yatsu yiladeha means. We might think it means live. We didn't necessarily read the verses as we did 5 minutes ago and hear the explanation. Let's just say we're looking at the Mishnah cold. It says the next three words, patur midmei vladot. exempt from payment for the vladot, for the fetuses. That phrase, the may vladot, is from Chazal many places, payment for the fetuses. And of course, there wouldn't be such an expression had abortion been murder. If it was a life, we know a principle, there's no kolper, you never can pay for a life. In this case, there could have been demeid vladot, but patur even from that. No, there's no payment at all. There's no payment at all. And we're not sure why. It doesn't say why. We can guess why. Why would you guess?
Because he's a bull.
He's a bull.
He doesn't have much of a brain.
Doesn't have much of a brain.
And the woman should get out of the way when they get bull fighting.
Yeah, what was she doing in the way of a bull fight?
Okay, right. You could perhaps think that that's what's going on.
Especially
in other words, you might say to yourself, that had the bull intended to attack the woman, well, that would be what category of nezik? What category, what do we call it?
Shomu'ad.
Shein, Regel, Bor, what do we call it?
Oh.
If he just went up and personally, it's Karen, right?
Yeah.
If he went up and attacked the woman, and he caused an abortion, miscarriage, I should say, so you might think, in that case, that he did it purposely, Chayav, and you might say Chayav Hatzinezik. If it's a Shor Tam, you might have said Chayav Hatzinezik. If it's a Shomu'ad, you might have said Nezek Shalim.
But you just said a while ago, it doesn't matter whether it's intentional or unintentional.
I said that vis-a-vis not a shore, but vis-a-vis a human being.
Uh-huh.
Right?
Yeah.
This is a shore.
Also.
Now, I didn't mean to say that I'm certain that with a shore we should divide between intention and lack of intention.
But the Mishnah does.
I just said it looks like the Mishnah does, because the Mishnah emphasizes that this particular shore's owner is patur from payment for the fetuses, and it looks like the reason is because the shore was mitkaven lechaviro. He intended to get his fellow, and instead got the woman.
Does it?
It's only one more sentence. It looks like you should infer that since the Mishnah emphasizes a case of intended to get the shore, and said he got the woman, and exempt from payment for the fetus, you might infer from that that if the shor did it intentionally, got the woman on purpose, then hayav. You might get that impression. I'm not saying it's right. I'm saying that's a plausible way to read the Mishnah. So Benny and then Mary Beth.
Isn't Karen anything that an animal does that damages, but it's something unnatural?
Right.
So it wouldn't make a difference whether the ox was trying to or not trying to, it would still be Karen?
From what we know about Karen, indeed, we've never heard a difference between intentional and... Have we?
If it's unintentional, it's regular.
Well, that's...
But that's a normal...
No, but that's like normal traffic.
That's normal, but that's not the
Karen is boring. Karen is aggressive.
Yes. Something an animal would not normally do.
We've never really dealt with the idea that an ox would be Karen-ing.
Okay. I forgot. We had a mission about this. Excuse me. Good question. Let's see.
They always have good questions, these two kids.
I know.
I love having you in class.
Okay, so I think that I was right. Because if the animal aggressively kicked, but didn't see that I was there, and I got kicked, I don't think it matters. But it could be that this is a case we saw as follows. The animal got angry and knocked down a wall, and it didn't know that I was on the other side of the wall, and I got hurt.
Mm-hmm.
We had that Mishnah. Anyone remember?
Mm-hmm.
So I don't remember where it was. Let's take a minute to look for it.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? I think that would be the answer to Benny's question. So let's look for that Mishnah. It leaned against the wall as far as I remember.
Over the...
We have a similar thing with the ubav of the
parah. But that's an animal, so it wouldn't be considered murder at all.
Mm-hmm.
Always be damaged. It's a monetary damage.
He
here.
Tell us where?
It's Perek 4, Mishnah 6.
Yes.
So I just realized that that's not a good case, because for a shur to be mitchakech bakotel, it rubs the wall, that's for its own hana'ah. That's right. That's shame. Right. So I made a mistake. We don't need that case. We need a different case. Is there a case in which it knocks down the wall purposely when it's angry? I just don't remember. If anyone can find it, let's see.
Well, even if it knew that you were on the other side and it was angry, wouldn't it still knock down the wall?
Well, this is knocking down because it's scratching itself against the wall.
No. Wait. If it's scratching, then it's hana'as. Right. I'm saying it wanted to knock down the wall, but not to kill me. Let me just think here. If anyone can help, please help.
Who's got the computer?
Where's Jim? Yeah.
Yeah, where's the guy with the computer?
Perhaps we didn't have such a case.
I don't recall another case.
Mm-hmm. Okay, I guess I am thinking of the one that Ilana found. I just didn't remember it exactly. Oh, wait a second. Ilana, it's the continuation of that same Mishnah.
Oi!
It's the Mishnah. Oh,
okay. I'm so sorry.
Perek Dalid Mishnah Vav, I think.
We need to go in.
Sure, Shaya mitchakech bakotel venafala adam. And then the second case is nitkaven larog et beima varag et adam.
Oh, so at that point it's Karen.
Then it's Karen, and the halachas patur.
There's also.
So Benny was right.
We have here a difference between Oved Kochavim.
But that's not a monetary case, I'm sorry. That's not a monetary case, that's a case of death. We're looking for a monetary case.
So he meant to kill the other bull, but injured him.
That's the case we're looking for.
Okay.
Yeah.
If it did kill you.
Okay. So we can't find such a thing. I don't know. So we'll have to go on without an answer to that.
What was the question? If he tried to kill?
So the question was, can you remind us of the question?
I forgot it. What was your question?
Was about whether the Karen was intentional or not?
I don't think there's any differentiation in Karen, whether it's intentional or not.
Yeah, and again, I'm not sure. Mm-hmm. Karen, is there differentiation between Kavanah and lack of Kavanah? Mm-hmm.
But Karen is aggressive, so there is some evil intention.
No, but again, what I said, it could have been that it had evil intention against the wall, but not against me. Or it evil against, it wanted to kick you and kicked me. But my guess is that it doesn't matter, the intention. As long as...
So in a way, the killing of this embryo is like tzorot.
I was just thinking that same thing.
When
you kick up pebbles, and the pebbles do some damage. So let's try and go back on track now, okay? But Mary Beth wanted to say something.
Yes, can we go back to the Mishnah that we're reading?
Of course.
Where is that?
That's chapter 5, Mishnah 4.
Page 49.
A little more. So I thought that we decided earlier that a miscarriage, a stillbirth, is not
murder.
it's not a murder. It's not
That's
really,
correct.
Okay?
That's what I That's claimed
so it doesn't
was
matter
the way it comes
what
out.
Causes it.
The verses were talking about human beings, but I would think that it's true also for animals causing a miscarriage. The most that the owner of the animals would have to pay to the owner of the stillborn would be demay vladot, payment for the fetus.
Even if this woman is standing there and she's always been trying to get pregnant, blah, 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 you know the way we think about pregnancy, but this ox comes and causes this baby to come out, and everybody goes, well, it's just one of those things.
Demay vladot. Demay vladot. Payment for the fetus. Mm-hmm. It's not a capital case.
Mm-hmm. So okay. It's not one of those things, but it's not murder. But it's not a good thing or a neutral thing.
Right.
Well, but I guess
the tragedy
making
means
a value. It's a value.
Murder.
It's making a value judgment.
Right, right it is.
It's one of those things. It's
right.
Like a hamster or something.
Very bad.
No.
We're getting pregnant a lot younger. Which really increased the chance of getting pregnant. And there were no contraceptives, so children were not so rare.
Well, but we have plenty of examples of distinguished women who had difficulty.
Right. What about we have
okay, okay, but let's, right, so let's go back to the subject. So Mary Beth, causing the miscarriage is equivalent to cutting off your pinky.
Yes.
Me
yes,
cutting off
exactly.
your pinky.
Uh-huh. It's like
or your hand.
Right.
As long as you don't die from it.
Okay.
And actually, Rashi explains when he talks about the Mishnah and Masechet Ohalot that brings this forth, that the fetus is considered to be Yerech Imo, like the loin of the mother.
Right. It's part of the loin.
Part of the mother.
Right. Okay.
Okay. So now let's go on. We're in the second clause of the Mishnah. V'adam shaya mitkaven l'chaviro v'hika et aisha v'yatsu yiladeya. But a man that was intending for his fellow, to hurt his fellow, v'hika teisha and inadvertently struck the woman v'yatsu yiladeya and came forth her children. That's our verse. That's our verse right here. Right?
Yeah.
And what's the halakha? Mishalem de Mei Vladot.
Human is always supposed
Adam
to be totally in control
ah,
of
good.
What they're doing.
Adam Muad Leolam.
Yes.
Adam is always forewarned. Man is always forewarned. And here, even though I meant to hurt Paul and I inadvertently caused a woman's fetus to be aborted, even though I didn't intend the damage that I caused, Adam Muad Leolam, man's always responsible. It doesn't matter if I intended to do what I did or didn't. You have to be responsible for what you did. And what is the maximum responsibility for causing abortion? It's Mishalem Demei Vladot. Pay the money for the fetus. Pay the value of the fetus.
So it is Nezikin, not Nefeshot.
It's Nezikin and not Nefeshot. It's torts, as the lawyers say. Okay, let's now look at some of the questions I asked, just to review and get things straight. On A on the sheets, that relates to the verse, we talked about that already, we don't have to review that. And then B on the sheet is the Mishnah. What would appear to be the clear implication of the first clause of the Mishnah? As far as the law, in a case in which haya mitkaven leisha, if the man did intend to get the woman and got her, so you would think the implication is chayav.
No, the first case of the Mishnah is the shoal.
Yes. That's what I mean. I explained it wrong. Thank you. When I said he intended to get her and got her,
I meant the shoal.
Excuse me. Thank you, Ilana. So since the Mishnah says that the owner of the shoal is exempt when the shoal intended for that one and got this one, you'd assume that what we're supposed to understand as implied is that if the shoal intended to get this one and got this one, that would be chayav. That's probably what we should think. But the Gemara is going to say not like that.
There's another possibility that according to somebody's opinion, it's chayav, and according to somebody else's opinion, it's patur as well.
Okay. That's certainly true. But I'm just pointing out that what you would probably think to be the logical implication of the first clause of the Mishnah is that Hayav, if there was intention, the shore's owner is Hayav. We'll learn in the Gemara that it's not so. Let's go on to question three.
So shore is always tam unless one is moad.
That's true if we're talking about Karen.
Right.
Question three, what would appear to be the clear implication of this second clause of the Mishnah as far as the law in a case in which Adam Shaya mitkaven le'isha? Right, the case is that the man is mitkaven to his fellow but gets the woman. And what would the law be if he was mitkaven for the woman and got the woman?
But
Hayav.
She's alive, right?
Hayav for the vladot, for the fetus. Yeah. On the basis of what type of logic?
If he was unintentionally,
is torched
and not.
No.
If he was unintentionally, if he unintentionally hits her, and he hit and the fetus are killed, kal v'chomer.
That's 2 points, right?
Yeah.
Kal v'chomer, right? All the more so, and that makes perfect sense. And a kal v'chomer in this case, I don't think you could refute. If again, the man is obligated when he did what he did unintentionally, then all the more so is he obligated when he did it purposely. And you cannot refute, I think, that kal v'chomer, and that indeed is true, it's certainly in this case.
So there's no greater penalty, even a monetary penalty, whether it's unintentional or intentional.
And that's true, there's no greater monetary penalty for the fetus. You pay for the fetus if it's unintentional, and you can't be forced to pay more than the value of the fetus if it's intentional.
Don't you pay for attacking somebody just for the very...
So there might be a payment for the woman's pain,
right?
But for the fetus itself, you can only pay what it's worth. There's no payment to pay more than what it's worth. You're paying
so
for
even though we pay 4 times the value, 5 times in other situations...
Right. Not here.
Here, it's...
Not here.
Because Adam Muad
Le'olam, and indeed, because Adam Muad Le'olam, there's not going to be that distinction between mitkaven and lo mitkaven. Adam Muad Le'olam, intended. Right? Even if you didn't intend, it's as if you did.
There's no reward for not intending.
It's
right.
No. Except that there's no multiple, you know, it's not like you pay 5 times the value like you would in some other cases. Or 4 times or twice. Here it's
the penalty for the payment for the fetus does not go up, but there could be other payments for the...
There are other payments like Tsar and Boshet and Shevet, and there's a machloket. Some of them apply only when it was mitkaven. That's right. I don't remember the opinions as a machloket. Mm-hmm. So now let's look at the next question. We just did 4. And
I thought we just did 3.
Yeah, we also talked about 4.
Okay.
Could one read the Mishnah so as to avoid the above mentioned understanding? The answer is no. You can't avoid the kal v'chomer, the all the more so logic that Benny enunciated. Question 5 was answered by Jen. What is the 3-word overarching principle in Hebrew that explains why Mishalem Demei Vladot here, even if there was no intentionality? And Jen said the answer is Adam Muad Le'olam. Man is always forewarned when he causes damage. Now let me ask question 6, which is like cute. It's a cute question. It's an eye opener. How does this Mishnah relate back to the beginning of the chapter?
This is the pregnant cow.
Yeah, pregnant cow, pregnant women. And even more than that, I mean, we're talking about the loss of pregnancy in the first Mishnah, pregnancy of a cow. Here's the loss of pregnancy of a woman. That really does seem to be the associative theme.
There's payment, monetary payment for the embryo.
Monetary payment, right. Whether it's a cow that has a miscarriage caused or whether it's a woman that has a miscarriage caused.
But
the woman... For the human fetus, we have full value versus quarter value.
And half value.
Okay. Okay.
So it's good to know.
Yeah, but there's a difference.
Because right there, we were talking about Karen.
No, there's another thing. It's not in Mishnah Aleph, we are not clear if she gave birth before or after.
Yeah, so? Mm-hmm. I understand, yeah. I understand. Okay. Let's go on now. Question 7 brings us to the rest of the Mishnah. So let's go back and read the rest of the Mishnah. The rest of the Mishnah reads, Ketzad Mishalem Demei Vladot. How does one pay Demei Vladot, the money of the fetus? What does it mean, the worth of a fetus? What does that mean? How do you figure out? The answer is, Shamina Teisha Kama Hi Yafa Ad Shilo Yalada.
Yalada,
excuse me, Maya.
Yours.
Exact. Out there. Nikud. We, Shamin means me, we appraise, right, estimate. We appraise the woman how much she's worth before she gave birth. Vechama hi yafa misha yalada. And how much she is worth after she gives birth. And you take the difference. The difference is the value of the fetus. Now, you might ask, how do you figure out how much a woman is worth?
What they would sell for like a slave market.
Go to the slave market. Yeah. Go to the slave market, and you ask the slave traders, how much would this woman be worth pregnant, and how much is she worth not pregnant? And the difference is considered to be the value of the vadot, of the miscarriage, and that is how much has to be paid.
So it doesn't matter who this woman is, who she's married to, or if she's married.
No, you just take her to the slave market and ask the slave traders how much she's worth.
Now, yafa doesn't mean here beautiful.
Yafa does not beautiful, it means worth.
So that's, is that just Mishnah Hebrew, no, or is it in general?
The word yafa in Mishnah Hebrew means worth.
Worth, and elsewhere in biblical Hebrew, do you know?
But we have Kama Yafe Ilanz, Kama Nahe Ilanz. Right.
Yeah, I can't answer that.
Yeah. What does that mean? That we have to bless when we see a beautiful tree, we say how beautiful it is, but we use a different expression.
Okay, so we're going to go on. Amar Rabban Shimon Ben Gamliel. Said Rabban Shimon Ben Gamliel, Im Kain Misha Aisha Yoledit Mashpachat. Literally, that means, if so, when the woman gives birth, she's worth more?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. How do you...
Because she's proven...
Wait, Ilana, wait a second. This is with an exclamation point. That means, if so, according to what you said, that when the woman gives birth, she's worth more?
Well...
Let me explain. What he's trying to say is the following. I don't accept what you said. I don't accept what you said. Why don't I accept what you said? That you have to see the difference in value between a pregnant woman and a non-pregnant woman and take the difference? Because the difference would be zero. The difference would be zero because a pregnant woman is worth less than a non-pregnant woman.
You can still take the difference.
Wait a second. But that would mean a negative payment.
Right?
Yeah. We assumed a few minutes ago that a pregnant woman is worth more than a non-pregnant woman because she has the fetus in her womb. And whatever that difference is the value of the fetus. Says Rabban Shimon Gamliel, no, the assumptions were wrong. He says that the truth is a woman who's no longer pregnant is worth more than a woman who's pregnant. And the reason is, can anyone think why you would think...
She can work.
Well, there's a chance of her dying.
There's a good chance of her dying. The fact that she could work after she gives birth, okay, but on the other hand, what about the value of another slave? But all that's cancelled out by the chance, I don't know, in those days it might have been 15% or 20% that she might die. Then the Gemara says, well, it depends if it's her first pregnancy or her second. If it's her first pregnancy, it could be a 20% chance that she won't make it. So a woman who's pregnant has a 20% chance of dying. So therefore, she's really worth less than a woman who already gave birth. So therefore, it says Rabban Shimon ben Gamliel, we have to figure out a different way of appraising the value of the lost child. So he goes on and he says, Ella Shamin et tavladot kama hen yafin. Rather, we appraise the fetus how much it is worth.
How do you do
that?
He's not giving
slave market.
And you go to the slave market and you ask them, how much would you pay for
a baby? A woman with a baby versus a woman without
a baby. No, that we did already. No. We did already. No, we said that didn't work.
A baby versus a person.
How much would you pay for the right to this fetus right now? There's a fetus in her. How much would you pay for the right?
So not the woman.
Fetus. No, we're not worried about the woman. The woman might die in childbirth. I don't care about the woman. But looking at her swollen belly, how much would you pay for what's inside? You ask the slave traders. And they probably would pay something. They certainly would pay something. Right? If they could get the pregnant woman, the slave trader can get the pregnant woman, and they're told that after she gives birth, the woman doesn't belong to you, but what comes out belongs to you, how much would you pay now for the right to have that fetus? And that's what it's worth. Now, all this is pretty disgusting.
Yeah. Well, you know, I would actually, I would disagree to some extent.
That it's disgusting?
Yeah, that it's not, because this kind of thing actually happens nowadays, in healthcare policy. You know, you have a certain amount of money that you can pay for, you know, for healthcare, and it has to be apportioned, among many different, all valuable priorities. Mm-hmm. And so healthcare economists they have to come up with a number, because in the end, they've got a limited amount of dollars that they have to apportion.
Mm-hmm.
And so you say, okay, well, there's like a one number is called quality adjusted life years. Mm-hmm. You know, so you pay for the treatment for this younger, healthy person because they would have such and such many, they would live this many years, and maybe, you know, an older, unhealthy person would live fewer years and they wouldn't be as high quality according to, you know, these are all very
subjective
judgments, but they're economic calculations. Mm-hmm. And so I think it's not quite as coarse as I suspect.
That's
as
a very good point.
Sounds.
That's a fantastic
right.
point.
Hmm.
Yeah. And I would imagine they have to decide in the premature births, how much they spend for each kid that's born with this disability or that thing or needs to be in the incubator,
you know,
or the kids that
also
come out, or
with
if they're 2 months premature or whatever.
Yeah, that's true. That's true.
That whole thing. So then the value of that. Mm-hmm. The potential,
but it is disgusting.
Well, I mean, it's a terrible choice to have to make.
The fact that we do it now,
somehow.
It's still disgusting.
Well, but if you either you make a choice by not making a choice, you know, something turns out, or you do
it's more relevant today.
That's making a choice. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Right, exactly.
Okay.
It's more relevant today than we think it is.
Right. Okay. I stand happily corrected.
As disgusting as it is.
No, I really stand corrected. Yeah. It's not disgusting. It actually might be disgusting not to deal with it, because, like you said, you're making a choice by not making a choice, and it's better to make an informed choice.
These are always unpleasant choices.
Right. Okay, so in any case, however we estimate the value of the lost fetus, whichever method we use, the halacha is, I'm reading the next two words, v'noten labal, and give it to the husband.
Of course.
Because remember, the verse said...
That's disgusting. That's the part that's disgusting.
Okay. So for that, you have to talk to Mr. Stone. Because the verse says, as we read, Kashe yashit alav baal isha v'natan b'flilim. Right? It's talking about the baal. Talking about the husband. And we're going to get deep into that in the coming minutes. So you have to give the money when there is a chiyuv to pay demei vladot, when there's an obligation to pay the value of the fetus, whatever that value is, v'noten labal. Okay, so now we get to the real interesting part of this Mishnah.
Yeah, wouldn't the money go to him
in any other property damage case? That's true.
Like if your ox comes and gores my ox, you're still paying the husband. Why are they including it? Isn't it obvious?
Well, in most cases, let's say you have a husband and a wife who are married, everything they own is considered to be owned by the man.
Yeah.
Even the children.
So it's clear that if you damage the ox that belongs to this couple, you have to pay the man. But in this case, that monetary value was in her womb. But still, you have to give the money to the husband.
And if, you know,
if she doesn't have her own property, or she doesn't control her own money, so to speak, anyway, so why wouldn't it be obvious?
Yeah, why? She's
that you, of course, who else would you give it to? Yeah. But okay. The person controls the property.
And because this is her husband, then in some sense, he has ownership rights in that child.
If the child goes out and breaks your fence, the husband is still the one paying for it.
That's a good point. But wait a few minutes, and we'll see how this becomes deeper and more interesting. The next line, the last clause of the Mishnah: Vim ein la bal, if she has no husband. Let's say that she is divorced or she's a widow. Now, of course, she was pregnant, so her husband died after conception divorced after conception.
Or she was raped.
That's a less common case, but it could be. Noten liyorshav. Give to the inheritors.
The husband. Well, then it couldn't have been a rape case.
He's owning her after death.
But he wouldn't.
Right. Give it to the inheritors. The money belongs to the husband. It's part of his estate. If he's not alive, the estate goes to
the wife.
Not the wife.
No.
The wife gets the ketubah. Right? There's a certain amount of money that's set aside for her from the very moment of marriage. It might be a lot, it might be a little.
Right.
But the estate is divided up
among
the inheritors after the ketubah is already paid to the woman.
So anything that any monetary gain, any fines that are paid, that were to be paid to the husband, even if, you know, he's been dead for 20 years, they still go to the...
We're going to get to that right now.
So the ketubah is the first to come out of the inheritance?
As far as I remember. Yes,
that
indeed.
That's
Masechet Ketubot. It's... his money is mortgaged to the ketubah.
It's like a lien.
Okay, so we said, if there's no husband because he passed away, the money for the vladot goes to the yorshim. Okay? And now comes something fascinating. We're going to spend the whole next 20 minutes, even 25, on the next 6 or 7 words. Haita shifcha benishtachara o giorit patur. Fascinating. Wait a second. If she was a maidservant, meaning a slave woman, venishtachara, and she was released, she was freed, o giorit, or if she was a convert, patur. Let's think about what's going on here. Now, first let me explain that in the halakha, for a person to become a slave, a non-Jewish slave of a Jew, the person has to agree to take upon himself the negative mitzvot and many of the positive mitzvot as well. In other words, if I go to the slave market and I want to buy this slave from a certain non-Jewish slave trader, so the halakha is I have to ask the slave, are you willing to take upon yourself the mitzvot? If he says yes, I'm allowed to buy him and pay the master. If he says no, I'm allowed to buy him, but if he doesn't change his mind within 12 months, I have to give him back to the slave trader and get my money back.
What, is it the same thing in
law? Or I have to sell him to a non-Jew, but I can't keep him. And of course, in 99% of the cases, he'll agree because it's better to be the slave of a Jew than of a non-Jew, but that's a whole different can of kosher worms. So anyway, shifcha v'nishtachara. I didn't finish explaining, excuse me. So, for a man or a woman to become the slave of a Jew, they have to accept upon themselves most of the commandments, but not all. If at any point after that, the owner decides to free the slave, what freeing means they become a full Jew. I cannot free a slave unless he agrees to take upon the rest of the mitzvot that he wasn't obligated as a slave. And the act of freeing is the act of conversion. Now, of course, any slave will agree to it because it's better to be free than to be a slave. Which means that the case of Haita Shivcha v'nishtachara, she was a slave girl and she was released. And the case of a convert, they're the same case. Just different modes of conversion. A convert is someone who agrees to become Jewish without going through the process of slavery, whereas the first case is someone who becomes a convert after going through the process of slavery. But in both cases, we're talking about a convert. So now let's think about this case. If this woman, who was hurt by the man who intended to get this guy but got that guy, got the woman, and caused the miscarriage, if she's a convert, the guy doesn't have to pay for the vladot. See what I said?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, but why is that?
And why is that? What could the reason be? Seems pretty far out and strange. So we're going to read Rashi. Rashi, as far as I know, is undisputed here. It's a fascinating Rashi. It's D on the sheet here. D on the sheet. Everyone have a sheet? You guys are looking... I have an extra one. Do you want to...
Oh, yeah.
I thought I wouldn't have an extra one.
Thank you.
Okay. So we're in D on the sheet. Says Rashi, Haita Shivcha v'nishtachara. We have to follow carefully. It's important stuff and it's a bit difficult. Klomar Haita Mishuchreret O Giorit Nisua Lager. Ole Evid Mishuchrar. Translation. That is to say, if she was a freed slave or a convert, and then Rashi adds, married to a convert or to a freed slave. What that means is that the woman who's a freed slave that we're talking about is married to a freed slave. And the woman who's a convert is married to a convert. Ve'ein la bal, and she has no husband. Shemit, because he died. Patur. And then says Rashi, "Dehamachzik benechse hager shemit," that he who has rights, machzik, he who has rights to the property of a ger who died, vein lo yorshim, and he has no inheritor, zaha, he got it. In other words, if Paul is a convert and his shirt is in my house and he dies, and then the shirt's mine.
Because
a convert has no inheritors. Why no inheritors?
Because he has no
family.
Jewish family.
There's no Jewish family.
What if he has children?
We'll get to that. But putting children aside, his mother's not his mother as far as the halakha of inheritance goes. His mother's not his mother, his father's not his father, his uncle's not his uncle, his grandmother's not his grandmother.
So he has no minagei avilut?
He has...
What is that?
Le Doraita, he has no minagei avilut for his father, mother, sister, brother.
What is that?
What does that mean?
He has no mourning obligation.
Oh.
Doraita, according to the letter of the law. It doesn't mean he's allowed to mourn, but he has no obligation.
No obligation.
So then Rashi goes on to say, so that means if the convert dies and I happen to have some property of his, it's now mine. Because it belongs to no one and it's mine in my house, so I, through my through heaven in my house, it becomes mine.
So it's like chazakah. So the woman has chazakah on her vladot because the husband has no chazakah.
Wait a second. Says Rashi, near the end of the second line, after the comma, Vize kodumiskot bema shabiyado, and this one is first to acquire that which is in his hand. In other words, I am the owner of the ox that hurt the woman. No, we're talking not about ox, we're talking a man who hurt a woman. I am the man that hurt the woman. I intended for someone else, but I hurt her. The fetus was expelled. stillborn miscarriage, I have to pay. But if the woman is a convert and her husband is a convert, it means the money that's in my hand, I have to pay him. But then he died. What do I do with it? It stays mine because there's no one to pay it to, so it stays mine.
It's basically someone. What they're saying is you can't pay money to someone to someone if they're dead and they have no inheritor and they have no inheritor. So it's not necessarily convert or
very good, very good. Yeah. We're going to see that in the Rambam. We're going to see that in the Rambam.
Has no right even in that case to get the money.
Wait a second. Wait a second. We're going to get to that. Please, please, please. We only have 20 minutes left. Okay, so there's more in Rashi here. Says Rashi, V'hai dinakat, hai lishna, quote, haitash shibka v'nishtachara, translation, and that it took hold of this language of haitash shibka v'nishtachara, she was a slave girl and was freed, end quote. Velonakat, and it didn't take hold of Haitama Shukrerit, it didn't use the language of Haitama Shukrerit, she was freed. Why did it use the longer language of she was a slave girl and she was freed? Why didn't it just say, and she was a freed woman? Why didn't it use the shorter language, says Rashi? Mishum da'al korchacha v'sha'ein labanim hemena kamar. Because against your will, you have to agree, that it is that she has no children from him, it means. In other words, it used the language of she was a slave girl and she was freed to make it sound like it happened right now that she was freed. So that you can be certain that she has no children. She was freed right now, just recently, just 5 minutes ago. It's not that she is a freed woman. She's rather a slave girl who's right now freed. And therefore you can be certain she has no children. If she had children, then the money would go to the children. Because the children are the inheritance of the husband. But now we're saying, look, the husband is a convert. He has no mother, sister, father, brother. And also, since she only got freed right now, that means that there must be no children to this marriage. Therefore, there's no one to give the money to. Therefore, the perpetrator of the crime keeps it. Now, of course, it doesn't mean she got married 5 minutes ago. She had a fetus. She got married very recently. This was her first pregnancy. Because, like Benny said, had there been children, the money would go to the children.
But what if she had children before she converted?
They're not her children.
Yeah.
Well, halachically, they're not her children.
Yeah, her parents are her parents.
Wow.
Her
that's
grandmother.
It's very painful.
Yes, it is, but we're not finished yet.
They aren't halachically her children. They're still biologically her children.
Right. That's actually a good point. We sometimes forget that the halacha doesn't mean to change reality. It rather talks about legal obligations. To say that they're not her children, it doesn't mean they're not her children. It means halakhically the obligation of children and the laws of children don't apply.
What happens if her child, if her non-child goes and breaks my fence? Who pays?
She's not related.
So there's
they
no
do.
One to pay?
I don't know. That's not related.
Okay.
Sorry, I want to go on. Good question. So we're still in Rashi. Rashi now says, I explained that whole paragraph in Rashi. Now we're getting to the last paragraph in Rashi, Vehu Hadin. This is really the clincher. Vehu Hadin Nami LeYisraeli Nisua LeGer LeMeit HaGer. Translation, Hu Hadin, it's the same law, Nami also, for a Yisraelite, in other words, a born Jewish, married to a convert and died the convert. The convert died, the patur. That the person who did the damage is exempt, that doesn't have to pay. In other words, even though the Mishnah said we're talking about a woman who's a convert, it's really not important that she's a convert. What's important is that her husband is a convert. It doesn't matter what her status is, really. Because all of the money belongs to the husband. We don't care what her status is. She was just a carrier of the fetus. The fetus belongs to the husband. If the husband's a ger, then he has no inheritors. If he's not a ger, then he does have inheritors. So it doesn't matter what her status is. It matters what his status is. Why did the Mishnah talk about her status? Answer comes in 1 second. We'll finish the Rashi. Ruadin namili sreit hanisua lager v'meita ger tevator. And it's the same law also for a born Jewish who's married to a ger and the ger died, that the perpetrator's patur, deha demei vladot labal, that behold, the money for the fetus goes to the baal, to the husband. Vaha denakat shifcha v'giorit, and that the Mishnah took hold of the language of shifcha and giorit, of freed slave and convert, mishum destam shifcha mishukhrerit misua lemishukhrar v'stam giorit lager. Because in most cases, a freed slave woman is married to a freed slave man, and a woman convert is married to a male convert. That's an interesting snapshot of sociological reality years ago. And today it's perhaps true in 30% of the cases, but it's not true in most cases. Rashi says that's most cases. And therefore, when the Mishnah talked about a freed slave girl and a female convert, it really meant that the husband is in that category. Yeah.
The slave girl, could she get married before she was freed?
Yes, but that's...
It's not a Jewish...
But that's something completely different. That's okay. A different institution.
Uh-huh.
That's a different...
She has to be free... Well, it doesn't really make it.
It's not a halakhic marriage, I guess.
It's a different type of marriage. The couple wouldn't be still married if they were both freed.
Okay, gotcha. Okay.
Just like today, two Gentiles who are married and they both convert, they're no longer married. They have to get remarried.
Yes.
Okay. If they want to be married. So anyway...
So translate that, the Dinkat. What does Dinkat mean?
Please say that again.
What does Dinkat mean? Dankat or
Dinakat
or?
Tell me where you are.
Dinakat
means Nakat, take hold of. Dinakat, that took hold of. It means that it took hold of a certain language and used this language and not that language.
And it took hold of. So just translate that part. The shifcha.
Okay. Vaha dinakat shifcha v'giorit, and that it took hold of the language of shifcha and giorit, those two words. Mishum is because distam, that a normal shifcha mishukhreret is married to a mishukhrar, is married to a freed slave. Vistam, and a normal giorit to a ger. So now we can finally do the interesting stuff now. That was also interesting, of course. So let's just sum up and go on. So we said that in the case of a woman who's pregnant without children, and she is knocked over by this man, and a miscarriage is caused, and her husband dies, the money for the vladot goes to the husband's inheritors, and if the husband was a convert and there are no children, the money goes to where it is now. It stays in the hands of the guy who caused the damage. Fine. Now look what the Gemara says about that. Now it gets interesting. Says the Gemara at the bottom of the page, Babylonian Talmud, Tractate Baba Kama, page 49a. Haita shivcha v'nishtachara ugiorit patur. She was a shifcha and she got free, or she was a convert, patur. And Rashi explained it to us. That's the Dibur Matril, the opening phrase from the Mishnah that's quoted in the Gemara in order to begin a discussion. Amar Rabba, said the Babylonian sage by name of Rabba. Lo shanu ela, we didn't learn this except. In other words, it only applies to one case but not to a different case. Lo shanu ela shechavalba bechayei hager. We didn't learn this. It doesn't apply except shechavalba, except when he heard her, bechaye hager, during the lifetime of the convert. The convert is her husband, remember? So if the damage was caused when the convert is still alive, the husband is still alive, the metager, and then the convert died, the husband died, dekevan shechavalba bechaye hager, that since he damaged her, he hurt her, in the lifetime of the ger, of the convert husband, zacha behu ger, took possession of it, the ger, took possession of the money for the fetus. In other words, he owns it, even though it wasn't paid to him yet, he owns it. The event happened, the damage happened when he was alive, so the minute it happened, he owns the money that the assailant has to pay. V'kevan demetager, zachabahu minager. And since the ger died, he married it, he got possession of it from the ger. So since the ger died, then the person is supposed to give the money, the assailant, gets to keep it because the ger is dead. That's a repetition of everything we learned. But it only applies if the ger was alive when the event took place.
So he limits it to almost no possibility.
Wait a second, so the husband is still alive when the event occurs,
happens,
but the transfer of the money hasn't taken place yet.
Right.
Right.
And then the husband dies.
And then the husband dies.
And because that transaction, the transfer of money hasn't taken place, the perpetrator keeps the money.
Yes.
Okay. Would this be the same for any damages?
Good, the Rambam. We won't get to it probably, but the Rambam asks that question. So as Ilana says, this is limiting the law to less than 1% of the cases.
Yeah.
Aval, this is the last third of the second line, aval chaval ba lahar mitat ager, but if he heard her after the death of the ger, right? The husband was already dead. She was a
widow,
pregnant. She was a pregnant widow. Also not a very common case.
Right.
I say, take back, Ilana. We didn't limit to 1% of the cases. We limited to 50% of the cases. No, you're wrong, right? So, but if the event happened, the miscarriage happened when she was already a widow, a pregnant widow, then, last word of the line, Zachya la ihi bigavaihu. Merited, what's the word, not married, took possession of it, she herself. Ihi bigavaihu. She herself. Umechaye vishlume la lidida. And he's obligated to pay her herself. So if she was already a widow when the event happened, that means that when the event happened, the fetus didn't belong to the husband. There was no husband. The fetus belongs to her. And therefore, the perpetrator has to pay her.
Okay, good. I like Rava.
Even if the husband was a ger, it doesn't matter. The husband is gone. Because the minute the husband is gone, she becomes a master of her own economy. Whereas if the husband is alive, it's his economy, and if the husband was alive when the assault took place, so the money becomes his. He's dead, no inheritors, it reverts back to the assailant. But if the husband was out of the picture when the event happened, then she was her own economic unit, so she owns the fetus, and the assailant has to pay her.
And the same thing if they were divorced?
Yeah, same thing if they're divorced.
Her father doesn't own her possessions after marriage?
She's a convert.
Ah.
No, wait a second. It doesn't matter if she's a convert, we said. No, if she was once married, she's no longer
she's
in her father's
house. Her father's
yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Authority.
Okay.
But if she's divorced, the husband doesn't have...
Divorce is final. All the ties are broken.
So there's no custody thing, there's no...
Again, this particular... In this case, the husband is dead. But if they're divorced, they're divorced. And indeed, in the halakha, one of the rare cases in which a woman is her own economic entity is when she's divorced or a widow. Right? But that's only the opinion of Rabba. There's a machloket in the middle of the last line. Amar Rav Chista, said Rav Chista, maridichi, master of that passage. In other words, how could you say such a thing? How could you say that's ridiculous, he says. Atu vladot tsra reininhu vezachya bahu? Atu means, could it be? Is it that? Is it that the vladot are tsra reininhu? Are they like tsorot? Are they like coins bound up in her stomach? Vezachya bahu? And she merits them? What do you mean? You're relating to the vladot as if it's money.
Yeah. Well, it is money.
Good point. Wait to the next line. Then he's right. It is money. What do you mean? Ella, ite laval, zahale rachmana. Lete laval, la. Translation from the first word of the page. Ella, ite means yesh lo. Rather, if there is a baal, if there is a husband, zahale rachmana. Rachmana means Torah. The Torah gave it to him. If there's a baal, then the Torah gave him the money. Lete labaal, which means ain baal. If there's no baal, lo. No. I'll explain. There's a famous expression.
There's a famous expression that we should know, which is Gzeirat HaKetuv. Writing very clearly, Gzeirat HaKetuv, which means a decree of the Torah.
We're saying, Rav Chista is saying, it's a Gzeirat HaKetuv. The Torah said that the money for the fetus goes to the husband. The Torah said that. If there's no husband, then you don't do anything. Because the Torah said do that. If the kitchen don't apply, then you do nothing.
Yeah, you don't give it to the woman.
You don't give it to anyone. Nothing happens. The law is irrelevant. In other words, what he's doing is limiting the verse of the Torah to exactly what it says. Don't learn any principles from it. Don't apply it to other cases. Don't understand this case on the basis of other principles. No, it's a Gzeirat HaKetuv. It is independent. It's the answer in a vacuum. So it's a unique case. The assumption is that had we not had this verse, we wouldn't know what to do in a case in which a fetus is hurt. It's a sui generis case. And the Torah says, give the money to the husband. If there's no husband, then don't do anything. And no one gets the money. The halakha is like the first opinion. The halakha is like the first opinion, Rabba, which means we do give the money to the woman if there are no inheritors for the husband, and if the husband was already dead when the event took place.
So there is always an attempt to protect the woman if we can manage it with the text.
And I'll just add that, as Benny hinted, you can see in the Rambam that we don't have time to look at, the Rambam applies this to all cases, not just converts, all cases in which theoretically it should apply. Even if the husband has inheritors. If the husband died before the event,
it's not his anymore.
Then she is the owner of the value of the vladot. And whether he has inheritors or not, says the Rambam, she gets the money. In the end, the Rambam says it doesn't apply only to converts. And the Ra'avad disagrees with the Rambam, as you can see.
Why is Rav Chista saying that someone who is dead, they can have, I don't want to say property, but they have...
No, he's not saying that. Rav Chista is saying if the man is dead, the verses just don't apply and you don't do anything.
The assailant doesn't have to pay anything.
So if he cuts off her pinky, or if he accidentally cuts off her pinky, or if something happens to her, a different injury, it's still...
No, that's different. That's assault and battery. There are cases the Torah says you have to pay certain payments.
No, but you wouldn't pay for the missing pinky.
No, you would.
This only applies only
the fetus case. Only the fetus case. It's, we're saying it's a sui generis case. It's gzera teketuv. We can't learn anything from it from other cases in the Torah.
How often does that happen, by the way, that somebody would contend that it just means what it says and that's it? It seems like a kind of a
We find this, just on one foot, the case of the Ben Sorer Moreh.
Oh, okay.
The rebellious son, he's supposed to kill him. Yeah. So the Gemara asks, what about a rebellious daughter? So one of the Gemara is Zera Tekatuv. The case of rebellious son is its own world. It says son, and therefore it doesn't apply to daughters.
It's not
a
rebellious child.
Well,
like
so
that.
is this mean sort of that the pregnancy is different than just a piece of the woman's body?
Yeah. It means that it's, again, it's sui generis.
It's
just
something.
not awkward, but just a different area. It's not this, it's not that.
Okay, so at home you might want to look at the Rambam. It's pretty relatively easy Hebrew. Okay. That was pretty good. That was fun. Mm-hmm.